Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. We're back with you for another week of exciting news. And, of course, I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, joined today by Mr. Gabriel Krauser. Gabriel, how are you doing today?
Holla, what an interesting day. This is, it keeps happening. Spring. Springtime, blossoming of crazy stories.
We are very much going to be having some excellent news to start off the podcast with today, which is a very welcome change. And, of course, we also have Mr. Marius Ruud. Marius, how are you, sir?
How's it, Nick? How's it, Gabriel?
Thank you, man.
Very good. Right. So, without any further ado, let us go forward onto the important topic of today, which is that, Gabriel, unless I'm wrong, South African democracy lives to fight another day because the IEC has decided that the election cannot be postponed and instead it will go ahead on the 27th of October, or at least very close to that date. Gabriel, you've got the details. Let us know what happened here. Is this as big of a victory as I'm making it out to be?
Yeah, so I think as we've explained to listeners and readers in the Daily Friend, this court case ended up being about more than just the election, but actually about the relationship of the Constitution as a written text to South Africa overall. And the Constitutional Court was being asked to say that it has the superpower through a special mechanism called Section 172 of the Constitution, subsection 2 in particular, to say, look, there's this written text, but we can ignore it, amend it, suspend it whenever we feel like it. As long as we think it's wise, right? As long as we think it's just, then the paper doesn't really matter. The paper's like a bit of furniture. It's like a chair that we can sit on or lean on. But if we need to get up and walk away from it, we can cover the room.
Right. To quote that line from the first Pirates of the Caribbean, small sort of guidelines.
Yes, guidelines, not laws, guidelines. Okay, so that's what the court was asked to believe, the Constitutional Court of South Africa. And if it had said, yes, we have the superpower, we would no longer be a constitutional democracy. We would be what some people call a judiciocracy. And really, because of the way that court appointments work, if the court was not bound to protect the Constitution, it would just become a political arm to make up whatever the ruling political party wants. So that would have been kind of like the end of South Africa. The court said, no, we're not going to do that. So that's a great victory. The court also said we must go ahead with the election, which is what the Constitution demands. That's a great victory. What its reasoning was is not clear, whether it found on the facts or it lacked the powers. We'll figure that out later. We argued on the facts and in terms of the powers. The facts being that like 100 other countries could have elections, we can do it too. Here's the problem. The IEC, the most important and biggest risk, the big question that everyone should be asking, I'm taking your job away from you, Nicholas, and asking the question. The election has to go ahead. Is it going to go ahead freely, safely, and credibly? Or is it going to be mucked up? And I see three ways for it to be mucked up. The first and worst, in a sense, from a academic perspective, and from a fundamental rights, democratic rights perspective, is that the IEC refuses to have another voter registration weekend in time for the election. So KwaZulu-Natal of the Mini Zuma illegally disenfranchised hundreds of thousands of South Africans by proclaiming the election before the date, that before the registration could take place. We were the first out of the gates to say that this is rubbish. She said she was doing that so the IEC could go to court. We said that can't be true. It makes no legal sense. Later court documents showed that she already knew it wasn't true. On the first, she said she got the legal advice, and her legal advisor said to the court she acted on that legal advice, that it's not true. So that was kind of the first terrible lie, and it was her dodging the question, how dare you take away the vote from South Africans in this country where we've got such an issue with taking away the vote from people? Okay, so that vote has to be given back. If the IEC refuses to do that, and by the way, its court document said it has plans, standing plans, to have voter registration on the 18th and 19th of September. So we can go ahead and do that. And by our analysis, and we have tested this against previous election timetables in South Africa and international standards, it could totally have a registration weekend on the 18th and 19th in time to have the October 27th election. So it can go forward and it'll be fine. Register the people. Let people register. Let them change their address. We can go and vote. If it doesn't do that, and it'll have to say today, in fact, in an hour or two after our live stream, then this election will have a serious charge against it, that it was not credible, that it was not free and not fair, and we're going to have to do the whole thing again in 2022. Very exciting. Terrible. The second option is that the IEC suddenly decides all of the parties could register their candidates, but the ANC is a special case. So we must extend the deadline for them to register their candidates because they couldn't find the internet button or the iPad or whatever it is that they couldn't find. Okay. That all the other parties could find.
Right. So they claimed in court documents their employees were under emotional stress because they hadn't been paid for 3 months.
Also that. So, okay. You guys didn't pay your staff. So you didn't register everywhere in time. So, okay, we'll give you a freebie, try again. If it does that, it'll render the elections unfree and unfair. And we have seen allegations that it has already done that.
Right. Helen Ziller has said on Twitter that she seems to have heard that the IEC has decided to reopen candidate things. We don't know if that's true yet. We'll find out, I'm sure, shortly.
Yeah. I was supposed to be called by the IEC. They promised to phone me, their spokesperson, an hour ago, 48 minutes ago. They haven't done so. We will bring you that news as soon as we have it. The point is, if they do that, it will be the most blatant act of party sucker that the IEC has ever committed. The IEC has no legal argument to reopen the candidate lists. The only argument the ANC made about the candidate lists before the Constitutional Court was that it couldn't register any candidates during level 3. Because there's a ban on gatherings above 50 indoors and it needs 50 plus one for a quorum. So it said we can't do any candidate nominations. Now they've said they have clearly done candidate nominations and their spokespersons have said these nominations were all legit and legal and fabulous and excellent. So they've rendered their own argument moot because that was an all or nothing argument. Now they've done some. There's no other argument because they took that other argument of, well, we did some, but not all because we had internet problems to the electoral court, which is where it must be made. But then they withdrew it last week. So the IEC has no reason to do this legally. And it has a strong reason not to do it. And that is that the Constitutional Court took two bits of relief that the EFF had asked for. The EFF said, look, we kind of want what the IEC wants, but if they don't get it, here's what we want. So the IEC didn't get it, so that's why the court had to contemplate the alternative relief. Two things. The EFF said, we want you to lift the ban on gatherings above 100 people, no matter what lockdown level we're at, for political gatherings. The Constitutional Court said, no, we're not going to do that. The second thing that EFF asked for is, we said, please, please can you extend the candidate nomination deadline so we can get our lists together? The court said, no, explicitly. So this has been deliberated. The court said no. The IEC, to the EFF, the IEC can't now come and take that away and say yes to the ANC. That will drive the EFF mad. It will drive the DA mad. Both have already spoken out. MPs have spoken out about against it yesterday. I'm sure both will challenge them in court if they try to do this. But be that as it may, the Constitutional Court has already ruled. Thirdly, IEC said to the Constitutional Court, our whole issue is we don't have enough time beyond the COVID. Now the COVID argument's gone away. Now it's like we don't have enough time. Now they want to make more work for themselves. The court says you must re-register if you can, the voters, and do as nothing else. Do no more than is necessary, extra. Now they want to do two things. Doesn't make sense. Finally, the IEC said in its court papers, if we reopen the candidate thing, we can't do that. Because if we were to do that, our timetable couldn't make sense. We'd have to have the election in November, the 15th or so. So they've said to the court, we can't do this thing now. So if they do it, then they lied to the Constitutional Court, which is all to say, if they do this, someone either has to go to jail or more realistically, Glenn Mashini has to step down, the chairman of the board. The whole board basically has to be fired. The chief electoral officer is going to have to be fired. They're going to have to fire lots and lots of people because they're going to have to say, oh, it was our fault, and let me show you who did the wrong thing to prejudice the ANC. And I don't think anyone wants that who's in the position to stop that from happening. In other words, the guys in charge are not going to fire themselves. So I don't think it's going to happen. Helen Ziller does think it's going to happen. It definitely shouldn't happen. The third major risk and now I'm really done, is that the ANC plays a kind of Trumpian game and says, you know what, if we win, the election is legit, and if we lose, the election is rigged, and you arm South Africans with that kind of insurrectionary weaponization of ideas, and I think you will find that this country might be much more exciting than America was with its storming of the Capitol, and that makes me worry very much. So I hope ANC leadership exerts some discipline and starts getting ready to be relieved of the terrible burdens of government and to just take a bit of a holiday from those areas where they couldn't get their act together.
Yes, I also worry about that level of excitement. So, Marius, your thoughts on two things. Firstly, if we go ahead with the election as the candidate lists currently are, what will the impact be on the South African politics? And secondly, Helen Zille has not just said that the ANC is going to reopen the candidate lists. She also says that she believes that there is at least some behind-the-scenes collaboration between someone in the Constitutional Court. She didn't say, she didn't say it had to be a judge. It could be anyone. Maybe a staff member or a clerk or something, and the ANC and the IEC that are all sort of working together behind the scenes. What do you make of that, and what do you make of the political consequences of all of this mess?
It would be hard to follow Krauser at one of the, it was quite a vintage one, I think, but yeah, if the candidate selections aren't reopened, I mean, it's an absolute disaster for the ANC. I've seen some conflicting reports, but seems that they didn't register one proportional representation candidate in the whole of the Western Cape. There's lots of other places where they've done, where it's basically ANC strongholds in terms of municipalities where they have failed to register a large number of candidates where, as it stands, if they can't re-register, they will lose those elections, even if in the wards where the candidates, where they do have candidates, if every single person in the ward votes for ANC, they still won't be able to win municipality because they'll have failed to register in enough wards and what have you. So, I mean, this is quite big if this goes on. I think we're seeing, we're living through the collapse of the ANC in real time. And just like going bankrupt, the collapse of the ANC first happened slowly. Now it's happening very quickly. And I think this just shows, I mean, the ANC has shown it can't even run its own affairs. It can't pay its staff. It can't register its candidates. You know, these are basic things. And they want to, as a government, they want to control so many aspects of our lives. They want to control our healthcare. They want to control schooling. You know, they want to, there's, you know, there's a fringe, you know, wing in the ANC wants to get rid of private school, which I think is probably, that kind of things are going to grow. There's, you know, they want to do EWC. They want to, this new social security fund that was mooted where they'll control people's pensions. I mean, it's absolutely bizarre. But they can't even run Luthuli House. Now they want to run South Africa, which is still a fairly sophisticated economy and so on. You know, it can't be run by some people who, you know, still believe in 1960s, you know, Stalinist economics and what have you. So, but even if they do reopen the candidates selection or what have you, and the ANC can go and register their candidates, I'm sure this is going to be a blow against the ANC. People will see, you know, can we vote for these guys who can't even do basic admin? You know, and we've seen every, I mean, between 2011 and 2016, the ANC lost 8 percentage points in terms of overall support. It lost 4 out of the 8 metros, I think it was, maybe 5. Lost 4 out of the 8 metros. And so, I mean, we're going to definitely see it, even if they manage to have all their candidates, if they can be registered, they're definitely going to go, I mean, I'll bet money on this. They're going to go under 50% in national terms in for this election, and they're going to lose way more municipalities, and they're going to get a really bloody nose, and we are now at the beginning of the end of ANC dominance in South Africa, I think. So when it comes to Helen Zille, that's a bit harder. I mean, that's the kind of thing we're going to have to guess, I suppose. But I wouldn't be surprised if there is some collusion at some level between people who are senior in the Constitutional Court and the ANC. We know for a while now that the ANC, I think, does have a outside influence in the selection of our judges and so on. And we've seen people who would make excellent judges are not being appointed for a number of reasons, whether it's because of their race, because ideologically they aren't on side. I think David Unthalter, I think he's a good example of that. You know, he's recognized as one of the best, you know, legal minds in South Africa, and he keeps, you know, failing to get appointed as a judge. So yeah, I think there's definitely, I think there's probably, where there's smoke, there's fire. So I don't think, without having any more evidence, I'd say whether Helen Zille is right or wrong. But I wouldn't be surprised if she's right.
Gabriel, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think Marius did a good job of sort of helping people to understand that municipal elections are about potholes and about traffic lights and stop streets and electricity reticulation, but not generation, water reticulation, but not sort of gathering and preservation. In other words, it's very grassroots. It's very meat and potatoes. And so sometimes that can make people sound a little bit like they don't care. Especially, this weekend I was in the Bryanston Country Club and everyone's like, this is quite good news, but who really cares? We're all fine. We're all living in gated communities where we take care of ourselves. It doesn't really matter who's in charge at municipal level. But I think Morris has pointed out what the connection is between the municipal elections and the national story. Because the national story is, of course, also about bad rules. And it's not just the rules to come like EWC and NHI. It's also the rules that are around. The race nationalist statist kind of encroachment on competition, meritocracy, and so on. That's really crushing individuals and families. And the connection is, in the simplest terms, that where ideology fails is exactly at the point that rubber hits road. That's where it's the most obvious that there's a failure. And so in previous election cycles, we've seen this pattern that opposition to ANC ideology has been led at the grassroots level and then filtered through to national level. So I think that if this election is credible, if it goes forward as it must, and the ANC takes the knock that seems so likely, that this sets up a very interesting 2024, and then we get the chance to change the rules of the game. And then we can be driving on nice roads and living under proper rules. And I think that's the dream that's a plan that I work towards.
Yeah.
That's freedom.
That would indeed very be good. Another, it's always good to have a democratic transition.
Peaceful and credible transition of power. Hey, let's see how it goes.
Good stuff.
Can I ask you a question? Weren't you there in the Western Cape when the ANC got taken, was removed?
No,
Didn't you tell us the story about that?
No, I've never been in the Western Cape, in particular. Do you mean in the Joburg City Council? Because I was there.
I remember.
There was a lot of chanting and a lot of squabbling about rules and a lot of complaining about how things were done, and then eventually a sort of regretful sigh and a submission to the inevitable, at least for a short amount of time. That was sort of what it went like.
Good.
That's probably the best case scenario. Anyway, let us move on to another story which broke over the weekend, which has got everyone sort of talking. And actually, I think in the media has kind of drowned out the Constitutional Court stuff, even though it's less important in a lot of ways. And that is that former President Jacob Zuma, who I think the surprise of none of us, has been granted medical parole. The Department of Correctional Services said in a statement on Sunday that this is the case. Medical parole placement for Mr. Zuma means that he will be able to complete the remainder of his sentence in the system of community corrections, whereby he must comply with a specific set of conditions and will be subject to supervision until his sentence expires. So he's already spent several weeks in the medical wing of the Correctional Services Department. And now he has been moved to an external hospital for further treatment. Of course, one of the complicating factors here is that he also said that he couldn't appear at court for his corruption trial because he was too ill. There was reports that he was needing to undergo emergency surgery. It's not quite clear what this is. And when the National Prosecuting Authority asked what was going on and can we examine him with another doctor, he sort of said, no. So, Morris, what do you make of this? Am I being fair when I'm this incredibly cynical about this medical parole? I mean, Zuma is kind of an old guy. Maybe he is sick.
Yeah, look, maybe Isaac. I know, I think Roman Kabanek of Morning Shot, he tweeted that there's word on the street that Jacob Zuma is suffering from cancer. But I haven't seen anything to indicate that, and he still looks, I mean, I'm not a doctor, and I haven't seen the guy in person, but he still looks in fine fettle to me. But this is obviously, I mean, no, there's not one person, not one of the 60 million people in this country, I suppose, but the decision, I don't think. And it shows you, I mean, there needs to be an independent, there needs to be an independent way of determining medical parole and what have you. And it's, I think there's also some political considerations there. He's been let out, you know, in the elections that have just been, when the election is going to go ahead. And the ANC, I think, has been worried about its political support in KwaZulu-Natal. In 2014, the ANC got nearly two-thirds of votes in KwaZulu-Natal. In 2019, it dropped by 10 percentage points to 54%. And KwaZulu-Natal was actually its third worst province after the Western Cape and Gauteng. So it's quite telling, and I think this is part of, you know, we saw what happened in July with the, you know, I mean, a lot of it was linked to support for Zuma, but it wasn't just that, but that was the catalyst. And I think this is part of it. I think the ANC is thinking, you know, we're going to get hammered in this election. We need to do everything that we can to not get hammered. And I think releasing Zuma is part of that, I think.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable. And of course, I think one of the reasons we're so suspicious of medical parole is because, of course, Jacob Zuma's financial advisor, Shabir Sheikh, was found to have a terminal illness and was let out of prison and then was caught a substantial amount of time later playing golf. And as far as anyone can tell, although he's kind of completely disappeared from the limelight, he's still alive and kicking, as far as I know. Gabriel, your thoughts on this? Is this, you know, as big of a crisis as if he had never gone to jail in the first place?
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about the story that disturbs me. Something about it feels like a soap opera in the sense that Zuma seems in such a deep way to have been defanged that I kind of don't care about him nearly as much as those members of the ANC that are inside the National Executive Council, inside cabinet, inside parliament, making rules, making regulations, administrative action. And so I think that there's, you know, there's something about his story where everyone's already picked a side. Everyone's, you know, it's like a soap opera. Everyone comes back from political death. There's infinite resurrections and intrigues and excitements, but nothing really changes. This does in some senses to be another chapter of that. And I think that's what you both spoke to in the sense of it not being a surprise. I do think that the interesting detail of Arthur Fraser still being in charge of the Department of Correctional Services, despite, you know, commissions that one thing it leads back to is Ramaphosa in the sense that there, you know, everyone knows the Zondo Commission is state capture, but there was also the commission into shenanigans at SARS, a separate commission into shenanigans at the SSA and the NPA, and recommendations were made. And Ramaphosa followed the recommendation, for example, to remove Tom Moyane, but he has, you know, he has allowed time deadlines to be extended for some of those commissions and also failed to really give substance to some of those recommendations. I think that if the process had been properly followed, Fraser could not possibly reasonably still be sitting in the position that he's in. And that matters because it seems like, you know, the buck ultimately stops with him in terms of this decision. It also matters because yesterday the spokesperson for the Department of Correctional Services was on Newsroom Africa at the same time I was sitting on a panel there. And he was asked, does this mean that Jacob Zuma, if he gets prosecuted and looks like he's going to be taken to trial by the NPA, maybe even this week, if he's eventually found guilty in that regard, would he be still sitting with his get out of jail free card, even if his condition improves? And the answer was basically yes. Like, first there'll have to be a test to see if he's fit to stand trial. So if he really is dying and has kind of lost his marbles, then it'll be no, and it'll be a sad kind of ignominious thing. And I think a lot of South Africans will feel a bit embittered that they were right every time and not trusting him and wrong this time. But if he does live for the next 10 years and not in jail because he got this get out of jail free card, that's going to be super irritating. And one last point, why is there so little trust in Jacob Zuma in this case? Because in this case, his own spokesperson, lawyers and representatives said that there can be no second medical opinion. that the first medical opinion of the medical doctors is the be-all and end-all. Then, and that's because the NPA wanted to get its own medical opinion or to get an independent medical opinion. Then the Department of Correctional Services comes with its doctors. And so we get a second medical opinion. And then they say, no, second medical opinions are great. Thank you. This one also says he's sick and he must go. But neither of them are independent. It's Arthur Fraser's medical opinion coming after the Army's medical opinion, as compromised as that is. So it's, you know, if there'd been an independent one and then we were sitting in the situation where he was still being given medical parole, I think that'd be a very different situation. And then we'd be talking about how unfair it is that so many people who really do deserve it because they've got terminal brain cancer and die within a month are not given the chance, even though the law allows it, to step out and die in hospice. Anyway, I think the political implication that Marius brought up of KZN being a battleground state, maybe metaphorically and quite literally, in this municipal election, and the ANC therefore feeling impelled or applying pressure to get all their assets in play that they can. I think that right now, a lot of journalists should be kicking themselves for not having followed IFP politics more closely, NFP politics more closely. I myself have visited KZN rural areas, spoken to councillors, Ndunas and so on, but still not nearly enough, because this is a fascinating question. What happens, and if the IFP gets a lot of actual administrative power, does it have the bench to step onto the field and run the show well? I certainly hope so. Looks like that's going to happen. But when we talk about the ANC getting punished by opposition parties, I think there's several opposition parties that are going to be looking forward to this election as an unprecedented opportunity. And I think that peaceful transition could be great. I know it's the same talking point, but it's just so rare in this country that we get to be as confident as we are, that an election is going to bring change. So I think it's important to dwell on.
Further to that, Marius, am I correct in saying that there's also an enormous number of municipalities in KZN where the ANC did not manage to register all the candidates it was looking to register? And so that in of itself is opening the door to take over by the IFP, I guess, in most cases.
No, definitely. And, I mean, outside of the Western Cape, the KZN's been the ANC's, historically speaking, weakest province in terms of municipalities. If you look at a map, you can just see the northern KwaZulu-Natal is pretty red in terms of, like, you know, red being the IFP's color. When, you know, Southern Natal, I mean, I was having a look, I think in Ulundi, the ANC gets about 10% of the vote. So it's quite telling. But then it's quite interesting if you go down to Southern KwaZulu-Natal, the ANC gets 60-70% of the vote in some of those municipalities. But the KwaZulu-Natal is a fascinating province. It's, apart from the Western Cape, it's the only other province in South Africa that has been run by a party that wasn't the ANC at some point, with the IFP governing it, I think alone between 1994 and 1999, and then in coalition with the ANC until 2004. So, I mean, it's already, historically speaking, quite unique. And yeah, I mean, I think where KZN shored up ANC support, after 2009, I think this could be, you know, where we start seeing it collapsing. It could be a harbinger for what's going to be I'm losing my throat pressure. But what could be happening in South Africa over the next couple of years? So it's definitely a province to watch. And yeah, I just think these are going to be the most chaotic and most, definitely the most chaotic elections since 1994. And maybe, I mean, in the United States, they talk about realigning elections that come along every now and again. And this, maybe in South Africa, this could be a realigning election, or maybe, you know, case you made would be the first realigning election in post-apartheid South Africa.
Right. No, that's definitely the case. And yeah, we shall have to see. I think it's too early to really say precisely what's going to happen. I see someone in the comments is asking, what will ANC voters do if their candidate isn't on the ballot? Well, I don't think we really know yet. Some of them may
stay home. Some are going to stay home. Some are going to spoil. Some might vote for... I mean, we saw some stats that showed... ANC's second party was the EFF generally, but also a lot of ANC supporters actually said the DA was the party they voted for. They couldn't vote for ANC. So
yeah, if I remember correctly, it was about a third were down with the EFF, about a quarter said if I can't vote for the ANC, I'll vote for the DA.
Mm.
Right. So I think both those opposition parties will make some hay. My final note is this. Look, we don't know yet. It is now 2:15 whether the IEC is going to reopen registration and the opportunity to shift your address. If it doesn't, the Constitutional Court has ordered that you can do it until Friday, the 10th of September, by going to any municipality. And it is, and the online has been reopened. I've checked that. Spread the good word. If they don't allow voter registration to take place, it will be the clearest sign that they're trying to scotch this election so that it's a, so that ANC loses terribly, but then they can go through the whole thing again in 2022. By then, you know, I don't know with what money. It can only by that stage be with properly stolen money. So I don't think that's a good scenario for South Africa. The best way to stop that from happening is to maximize the registration and maximize participation in this election. So whatever party it is, you know, register to vote, encourage other people to do so. The mainstream media is not on this. The IEC is not on this. ANC is not on this. So the usual guys that like encourage people to register to vote, and I know it can get super irritating, those guys are not on this. If that decision goes the wrong way, if they say they can't re-register, the Concord has only given until the 10th of September. So, I mean, that's this Friday. So encourage people to do it and do it yourself. I think that could be a huge difference maker, how many people actually get involved in that process.
100%. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow on the Daily Grind Show. Cheers, everyone.